I'm Maryam Saleh from Niche Arabia. I'm from Saudi Arabia. I'm based out of Jeddah, but my company works between Jeddah, Riyadh, and Khobar.
I'm Michelle Schifiletti, and you're listening to Thaqafat.
Maryam Musalli, a Jeddah-based entrepreneur and luxury goods expert, founded Niche Arabia in 2011. Her award-winning luxury communication and consulting firm has garnered international recognition for elevating the Saudi Arabian fashion industry and successfully connecting global brands with regional markets in the GCC. Maryam began her fashion career almost a decade ago as an editor and journalist, where she established the Life and Style section of Arab News, the Middle East's leading English newspaper, and has regularly contributed to international periodicals such as Harper's Bazaar Arabia, Marie Claire Arabia, and Hiya magazine. Maryam has been interviewed across many international platforms, including CNN, Al Arabiya, and NBC, and continues to be called upon for her knowledge of the luxury goods and creative industry. Her role as a pioneering ambassador for the Middle Eastern fashion industry was cemented in 2014 with an invitation from the First Lady Michelle Obama to attend the Celebration of Design Gala at the White House. Maryam was the sole Arab invitee, and she was also the first Saudi national to be included on the prestigious Business of Fashion 500 list, which recognizes the fashion industry's most trailblazing figures. She also made the British Fashion Council's first-ever New Wave Creatives list, ranking her among the world's most innovative and inspiring young talents. Most recently, Maryam published a photography book titled Under the Abaya: Street Style from Saudi Arabia, a window into the diverse Saudi fashion scene and the progressive young women behind it. The book immediately sold out in its first run and has earned praise from both international press and established local institutions. Welcome, Maryam.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm excited to be here.
Okay, so let's get started. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you grew up. How did you get to where you are today?
How did I get to where I am today? I mean, I think it has a lot to do with luck. I think people try to kind of put shove luck to the side, but really that does have a lot to do with things, opportunity and being there, in the right, the right place at the right time. But basically, so my story begins, I was born in Sri Lanka. My dad was country manager for Saudi Arabian Airlines. So we lived between Maldives and Sri Lanka. And then we moved to Korea. So I spent 3 years there. And then Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, for another 3 years. And then I finally moved back to Saudi when I was like in third grade. Spent my, middle school years there, and then went to boarding school in Switzerland, and then university in Washington, D.C. So I am by definition a third culture kid. My father was quite similar. My grandfather was a diplomat, so my father, moved every 3 years as well. Hence why my Arabic is non-existent. It's horrible. Something I definitely, regret, and I hope, to make up for in the future. But yeah, I mean, so, I traveled all over, and when I settled here after college, I felt that I wanted to make this my home. Not for anything, but it's almost like I was overcompensating the fact that I was a third culture kid. It was that, this was the thing that was most relatable to me. This is where I traveled every winter break, actually. So every winter we were here, and every summer we were in Los Angeles, because that's where my mom's from. And, for me, I felt like I related more to my family and friends out of Saudi. Maybe it was if the fact, the religion too, having that connection, with, being Muslim. So yeah, I mean, I think that, when I came back, I always had that kind of mission, that ideal that I wanted to be the PR for my country, whether it was by actually working in PR, which I'm sure at the time I didn't have that in my mind, or just representing us, through my writing, because I always wanted to be a creative writer, a script writer, actually. But that didn't really turn out. I ended up taking my writing into, journalism.
How do you feel like growing up all over the place affected like what you wanted to do in your career?
Well, I think, that's the thing. Like I said, I think there was this idea of overcompensating or just wanting to feel at home. And coming back to Saudi, I was open to that. So it was almost like I was rediscovering my homeland in a way. And I think that's what made me fall in love with it, that I came into it with a really open mind. You have to understand, okay, like I was born in 1985. So yes, I grew up, while things were still changing, but they were still very, closed off. Today I was, in my car with my son, I was taking him to his little preschool thing. His social life is more than, more active than mine. And I'm in the car and we're listening, and I think it was like Cardi B's WAP comes on. Okay. And I'm just sitting there in the car, like, okay, on the radio, and this is Saudi radio. And I'm just like, I remember, like, just if there was a word in a song and the guy said sexy, how we'd be like, oh, I can't believe that's on in Saudi, and how that's changed so dramatically within. And I wouldn't even say that that's 10 years, the last, you know, 3 years really. You know, and I've seen that with, you know, different things, you know, where women are more willing to own things, you know, have ownership, I guess, of ideas. You know, before you're kind of known as like your relation to a man, like I'm Saud, you know, or whatever, but not my first name, not my name, not my identity. And I'm seeing that, you know, that change has happened dramatically in the past 3 years, where we're seeing women, you know, on social media showing themselves or even owning businesses and, you know, saying, this is my name. You know, like, I feel like this is really something that has changed quite a lot in the past few years.
Growing up, kind of knowing that you wanted to do something, but not exactly sure in what you wanted to do. How did you then decide to start your business? Because everyone knows you don't grow a business overnight. So share a little bit about your journey to Niche Arabia.
Sure. I mean, look, like I said, I think that a lot of it had to do with, you know, just being in the right place at the right time. And when I say that, I mean, you know, I started Niche when I was 25 years old. It's going to be 10 years this November. So I celebrate our 10-year anniversary. And when I started at 25, there was no way in hell I was ready to do that. I was working at the newspaper. I, you know, was this proactive, you know, young 20-something, eager to do everything. And what I saw was that there was no one telling our stories as young Saudis. You know, if you looked at even our newspapers, you know, like Arab News, we were publishing stuff from the wires. So we would get stuff from Reuters or AP Press, but we weren't telling our own perspective. I mean, even when we were telling our story, it was really kind of a reaction to what the West was thinking about us. And I felt like, you know, this was post 9/11. And I was like, you know, we need to talk about the young Saudi chef or the young graphic designer. You know, 10 years ago is what, 2010. There was no one doing what Niche is doing now. So there was no one targeting the luxury consumer specifically. There was no one actually dealing with a female and her 360 needs. And so I started the life and style section with another editor, a senior editor, who was kind of like my mentor there. And from that, I ended up meeting a bunch of designers and, you know, creatives, architects, painters, when I would travel and cover, you know, different events, whether it was Art Dubai, Fashion Week, you know, you name it. And from there, I realized I was giving a lot of advice on how to enter the Saudi market, because I was Saudi. I was their target market. I was that young 20-something that they're trying to, you know, right, to sell something to. And so I basically said, you know, I had another mentor of mine, a jewelry designer out of New York. And she goes, ma'am, you know, you should really start doing this as a business. And so what I was doing to subsidize my humble, you know, journalist salary is I was already kind of, quote unquote, consulting without even having a business. I was doing this stuff on the side. And that's kind of how it happened. It was just quite organic. And I one day just sat in my little cubicle and wrote my, you know, my letter of resignation saying, thank you so much for the opportunity. This has been great. I'm out. You know, I'm going to start my own thing. And I remember, like, you know, a month or 2 months into it, my dad all of a sudden being like, how come you're always home? Like, before I never saw you and now you're always home. And I was like, oh yeah, by the way, I started my own business. Here's the registration. I need you to do it. Like, go to the Amara and register. And he was like, what? And he's like, you didn't even ask our opinion or like my advice. And I was like, I didn't want it. I knew that this was a jump. This was a risk. And I didn't want anyone stopping me, because, you know, with Arab News, I'm so grateful for what it did. It gave me a platform. It got my name out there. I got credibility because of that. And so I was able to leverage that into a business. It's kind of like nowadays you would say, like, an influencer gets a following and then she creates her, like, eyelash brand. Okay. Her lipstick. Yeah. This is the translation for you millennials that are not like Generation Z, you know, listening to this. So that's kind of how it happened. And I started Niche, and right away I had such amazing support from people. And I mean, it's amazing to see that the people that supported me then are still with me today. Like Rima Bin Bendit, Princess Rima, you know, she wrote the foreword for our book for Under the Abaya. She was actually one of my first clients. And I had Burberry, I had Libotan, all of these within my first year. And honestly, it was really difficult. In the beginning, I was told no so many times before I was told yes. And I think that's what Niche, that's how Niche started. And that's how we continue to be. I mean, today, we continue to be the first in many things. We did the first female public sports day that saw 10,000 girls go to Al Johara Stadium on Women's Day in 2017. We did the first ever live mixed model fashion show in Saudi Arabia, open to the public. We did the first fashion show where we flew in models from London for Burberry. I mean, that was emotional one for a lot of people, from the makeup artists to, you know, the fashion school professors that were there that just couldn't believe this was happening. You know, again, I think a lot of times people forget how things have changed so much.
I definitely want to talk about your book, but before we get there, let's talk about who would you say is the client for Niche Arabia?
Sure. So, I mean, Niche Arabia, like I said, we've been around for 10 years. So I have my ex-employees that I still consider Niche family. Funny enough, we're actually getting together now for on the Red Sea Spirit, one of our clients for the boat. So it'll be like a little reunion, which I'm really excited about. But I think, you know, that's the one thing about Niche is that I have Niche kind of like a platform, the same way I have Saudi Style Council, the same way I have Under the Buy. I want this to be a platform to help cultivate the talents out of Saudi. You know, our team is predominantly Saudi. We, you know, work really hard. Everyone, like I tell them, it's like, you know, cause I always tell stories of my newspaper days. They're probably like, oh, it's like grandpa stories, you know, but I'm like, you know, when my, you know, in my day I worked 24 hours. And if the, you know, if the, I didn't turn in that article, there was a blank spot in the newspaper, you know, like you couldn't have that. So you stayed up all night until it was done. And at the end of the day, your name's on that project. Yeah. So I want them to be proud of everything. And I think that's one of the things that's exciting about Niche is that, like I said, you know, I always put myself in the shoes of the customer, the client. Would I be excited about that? Would I go out, put on my makeup, get my hair done, you know, wait in traffic, wait between prayer times, get in the car, you know, before with my driver. Well, now I don't need that, but you know what I mean? Like all of those things to be excited to go somewhere. And so I always kind of use that as a litmus test with our team. Like we are our own focus group, which is, you know, I think one of the reasons why it's a unique selling point to other compared to other agencies, especially in the region. Going back to like, who's our customer and who's our client. That's what's great. It's always evolving. Before I would say, you know, when we first started, it was female brands. So it was luxury, female, luxury designer brands or beauty brands. And then all of a sudden we started getting, you know, cars and automotives. And then from there we went into F&B. Now our, you know, some of our biggest clients is governmental. So we've worked on some amazing projects over the past year, especially in the entertainment industry. And that's actually, you know, what we're doing. So my husband actually runs the Niche Entertainment leg, which now focuses on concerts, pop-ups, different kind of, you know, activations. And we are now launching next month Niche International. And we have, you know, two amazing people based out of Dubai to launch our team there. So we're starting that now in November.
Oh, that's so exciting. Congratulations. Yes. I mean, it's crazy because 10 years is a long time, but at the same time, you've built so much in that time period.
Thanks. Yeah, no, I mean, it's been hard. I mean, I started off as a one-woman show for sure. I started my company like that. I actually, my first employee was Alal Bulki, the influencer. She was a graphic designer. This was before she went off to New York for her master's. And I basically was like, hey, I need my business cards designed. I mean, like, you know, like I just need the templates for my invoice. I got this. But also I did branding and content development before I worked at the newspaper. And that's actually how I was scouted by Khaled Al-Maina. So for there, I knew how to kind of position brands and I knew strategy. And I think that's kind of something that has stayed with Niche all the time. We don't just do things just to do things. We want to make sure that there is, you know, a return on investment. There is an impact that happens.
Let's talk about Under the Abaya.
Great, sure.
Share with our listeners all the concepts behind it and kind of how it came into fruition.
Sure. So, I mean, it started in 2000. It goes back. So in 2016, I was asked by IFRA, which is an organization out of Khabar, the East Coast. It's a cultural center, so it's amazing. They do a lot of amazing initiatives to speak, to be like a brand ambassador and go to the States and talk about me as a Saudi female entrepreneur. And I thought, okay, that's great, but like kind of awkward. Like I'm not going to stand there and like just talk about, okay, yeah, I did this and this, you know, the White House, blah, 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 name drop here, name drop here. Yeah. So I decided to do something that showed what I do as an entrepreneur. And you know, one of the main things is creative direction. We do campaigns, we do, you know, different projects, events, but there's a lot of creative direction involved. And that's kind of where I see myself in the company. So I said, okay, I'm going to write a monologue and I'm going to get 12 Saudi fashion designers to be part of this cool film that we're going to do your film. And it'll talk about, I mean, and you can see it, it's on the actual website under thebio.com. And what it talks about is like, you know, how fashion was basically an outlet for these girls to be more financially independent, to be participants of the economy. It's not just like, you know, superficial fashion, but these are actual fashion entrepreneurs. So I did that. And, you know, I was so excited to go to, I was in California, okay, where my mom's from, I was like, I got this, you know. And while I was giving the, you know, this video, having all the designer, you know, mannequins with their clothing, I realized the questions were still the same. So Miriam, I can't believe you're sitting on stage and you don't have your hair covered. I'm like, okay. And then it was like, oh, you know, like, you know, what kind of fashion do you guys wear under the abaya? And it was just, it was crazy for me to see that in 2016, I was still getting fed the same questions that I got asked in 2000. from there, I was just inspired. And I was like, I can't just let this be the end of this conversation. I need to do something. And I had called this film Under the Abaya because it was about the woman, you know, wearing the abaya. Yeah. And so in 2018, when I got asked by Jeddah Art Book Fair by Abdurrahman Ghazzaz to be part of this fair. And he said, Miriam, I want you to come and participate. I said, listen, that's great, but I don't have a book, you know, at the time. And he was like, no, but I really want you to be part of it. And I was like, you know what? Maybe this is the push that I need to just get this thing done. And so I posted, yeah, you know, like the deadline, you know, there it goes, my journalist, you know, coming back. And so I basically was like, okay, I posted a thing saying I'm asking for street style photos for people to submit. And within a week, I got over 1,000 submissions. It was crazy.
Wow.
And women were like, oh, I'll do it. I'm so excited. But like, crop off my face or, you know what I mean? There was always like hide my identity. Like they wanted to be part of it. But then again, it was still taboo to kind of own it. And so like, it was such a crazy shift to see that. Like in 2018, everyone was so gung ho. Yes, I'm down. And not only that, they wanted to even have their Instagram account, you know, underneath. Like it was amazing to see that shift. And so 2018, I launched it in February. We sold out and we were able to put 5 girls in school, which was amazing for photography. And some of them are actually have submitted photos for the second edition, which is great. Huh. And yeah, so we gave 2 full scholarships, one, 75 and, 250. And then the ones that got 100% scholarships also got 2 cameras. So we gave them also the tools to pursue their dreams, which was amazing. And it was in collaboration with the Future Institute. From the success of the first edition, you know, seeing not just the interest internationally, but also the interest locally. I mean, I kind of knew that this kind of happens in Saudi, by the way. You do something, then people catch on later. So I kind of always knew the first edition would be called the first edition. And so this second one is really the one that I put a lot of, like, I would say a lot more time and effort in it, because the last one was published, by the way, within 2 weeks. It was crazy. This one, obviously, we had more time. We had a year to do it, and we had an amazing partner, Lux, that came on board to help support us. And we included a paragraph about each girl. So now you're actually learning about them. What we did is we made sure that it was that it wasn't just fashion oriented. So we have engineers in there, we have restaurateurs, we have fitness instructors. We really wanted to show the diversity of the Saudi female in the book.
Yeah. It's, how do you feel like, well, first of all, I think it can't be understated how important it is for people to tell their own narrative. I think that's so important. And I think that's when narratives get lost, is when the third party kind of comes and takes their narrative, which is a huge reason why I started this platform, because it's just people can speak and there's no one that's going to filter what they have to say. But how do you feel like the cultural industry in general in Saudi has changed since you first started Niche Arabia 10 years ago?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that, you know, it's now, look, when I first started Niche, people kind of was like, okay, yeah, Saudi's an interesting market, but, you know, we're good here in Dubai, let's say, you know, like the closest, you know, next closest, the next best thing. But what's happened now is that then all of a sudden, you know, with the recession that hit and, you know, people are looking at where are people still spending money. Then they looked at Saudi Arabia, you know, and that was great because they were looking at us and they're giving us, you know, just looking, but not really doing anything yet. And I think this is the first time where you're seeing people actually put money, you know, where their mouth is, so to speak, you know, where they're actually investing in Saudi Arabia. You're seeing this across the board in companies where it's no longer, you know, enough to have a satellite office in Dubai. That being said, you know, I think it's super interesting what you're just saying now about our narratives. A copy, I always say it's a copy of a copy, you know, where we have, let's say, people that haven't been to Saudi, but, oh, we're targeting the Saudi market, so let's cater to them, but without knowing them. And I think that, you know, that's so inauthentic. And that's what we're seeing. And that's one of the things that now with Saudi Style Council that I'm trying to kind of help, you know, fix in a way, like educate people, you know, use these Saudi creatives, use them for their point of view. It's not enough just to have a brief that's from, you know, a Western brand and say, here, this is exactly what we think Saudi's like, so we want you to execute this brief based on that. No, I mean, utilize them. I mean, I'm a consultant. This is kind of what I do. I, you know, I talk to companies, I talk to brands. I tell them, you know, this is, you know, how we think, this is what appeals to us. This is where we see, you know, inauthenticity. And I think, you know, the ones that listen, they're the ones that are successful. And it's not because it's me. I'm just saying that when they listen to an actual Saudi who's on the ground and knows what's going on.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's interesting because just the changes that have happened, and now I think you're seeing so many brands, and this is a conversation that I've had with other creatives that have said, you know, there's this idea of the consumer versus the creative. And now the shift is happening where Saudi creatives are now being taken as more than just a consumer, which I think is a really important shift.
No, I mean, definitely. And I think, I mean, that's one of the things we're trying to do is have is give or let allow them to demand their value. Because I think a lot of times, you know, one of the things that I work in the creative field, so I know this all the time. It's like, oh, Miriam, come and let's do this and let's collaborate. And, you know, and the collaborate is basically free work. And, you know, that's great, but that doesn't pay your bills, especially if you want to do this professionally as your career. And I think, you know, one of the things that I've, you know, and again, you know, I'm 35, so it took me quite some time to have that confidence to say no, you know, and I don't care if I miss out on that big event, you know, or that big, you know, collaboration. I know my value. And if you know my value, you'll pay me for my work. And I think that, you know, we need to demand that from companies, especially ones that want to come into the Saudi market. What I'm saying is that don't let them undervalue you. We get that a lot. We get that a lot, especially because we're minorities, you know, as women and as well as, you know, Arabs when we're dealing with international companies. And, you know, and that's one of the things, like, I know I always try to tell the creatives here, together we're stronger. You know, we in the Middle East, we tend to be very cautious of other people. You know, I remember when I was trying to get designers together, you know, 10 years ago, and they were just like, oh, no, he does thobes too, or she does abayas too. I was like, everyone's doing thobes and abayas, guys, duh. Like, you know, just duh, like, it's okay. Like, you guys can all be confident and share ideas, you know. And I think this is still something that's very new to our region.
Yeah. So you're 10 years in. If you're looking forward, What do you want to see for yourself professionally in the next 10 years and for your brand?
I want to retire. What do you mean? I'm tired. Yeah. No, I mean, I think what I see is I'll tell you my personal goal. And if you look at my career, like, it's always been about one thing. And I think that's been about me representing my country. I'm someone that's super nationalistic. I'm born on Saudi National Day. You know, I told you I try to overcompensate a lot, you know, due to my lack of Arabic. So I try to push my country as much as possible into the limelight. And I think I'm one of those people that really do believe I'm born in one of the best countries in the world. Like, I know that sounds really cliche, but I'm proud to be Saudi. And I think a lot of people are now, especially with this new young generation. They're excited. They're excited about these changes, and they're excited to share their culture with everyone else. It's not just about importing culture from everywhere, you know, from outside into Saudi, but actually us sharing it with the world. And so if I look at what I want to be doing is I want to be part of that wave.
Miriam, I want to ask you the question I ask everyone, which is, what does culture mean to you?
Culture to me is something that is a set of beliefs that is innate to a community or a group of people. You know, that's kind of like my definitive answer, but how I hold value to it is that it's something that really allows us to bond with one another. You know, whether you're completely different cultures, but the fact that you can recognize that that's someone, that that's part of their culture. It's things that also make you fall in love with a group of people. It's those idiosyncrasies, those we say stereotype in a negative way, but I think, you know, it could be used in a positive way where you have these positive stereotypes that come with our culture. And it's something definitely that I hold very dear in everything that we do under Niche. I think, you know, Saudi, even as a country, is very cautious of us becoming super progressive in a way that takes away from our culture. We are very proud. And I always tell people, this is something I always say, you know, being modern and traditional are not mutually exclusive. You can be both of those things. You can be a contemporary Saudi conservative woman and, you know, great. And that's awesome. And I think, you know, we need to, especially as women, I always say, like, we need to also educate people about what our idea of feminism is and our point of view. It's not the same as Western feminism, and that's okay. And it doesn't mean that one is better than the other. They're just different.
Miriam, thank you so much for joining me.
No, thank you so much.
Thank you everyone for tuning in today. It was amazing having a chance to speak with Miriam. She is such an inspiring entrepreneur, and learning more about how she built her business from scratch is truly amazing. If you'd like to learn more about Miriam, you can follow her on Instagram at miriam.musalli, and you can also follow Niche Arabia. I would definitely recommend everyone to check out the book Under the Abaya. It's really cool to see all of the different street style from Saudi Arabia. Please make sure you subscribe so that you can stay tuned on the updates. We have a lot of really exciting guests coming up this season. So until next time, and we continue to connect to the culture, Masarama.